And tonight, we're going to talk about Bigfoot. We're going to be talking about a program called Killing Bigfoot. Now, before you all go wild, hold back. But I've got the producer with me, and we're going to be talking with Peter Von Puttkamer in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Peter Von Puttkamer has been producing films for more than 25 years. His company is called Grafan Productions. He has created documentaries for the Learning Channel, Animal Planet, History Channel. He's got a fascination with indigenous people, anthropology, archaeology as well. He has literally climbed through ancient caves. He has filmed giant 12-inch tarantulas with Venezuelan blowgun hunters. He's been all over, and he's got a new program on Destination America called Killing Bigfoot. We're going to talk about all that later on tonight. You're going to hear from a couple members who are in that program as well, and we'll chat with them about why they're doing what they're doing. But, Peter, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, George.
Tell me about the title.
Well,
it's kind of controversial.
It is controversial. We had a lot of discussions with our network about it, and they were, you know, I mean, it's always good to have a certain amount of controversy around a show because you want people to come and watch your show. But I think the thing is, like, you know, these hunters are not murdering bad guys. They're nice family men. They're traditional hunters in the sense that they, you know, hunt deer and wild boar and feral hogs, and they eat everything that they shoot down there. They're not trophy hunters. They're nice guys, and they've been at this for, you know, 20 years.
Some of them are cops and things like that,
we've
right?
We've got vets. We've got ex-cops. We've got land surveyors. We've got young men with MBAs and tech computer specialists, IT guys, surveillance experts. So these are professionals.
All right, so let's talk about Peter for a moment, and let's go back to your career as you began doing this. I mean, 12-inch tarantulas? Are you crazy?
Well, that was a show I did called Spider Mania, and we were kind of looking at all the most extremes in the spider world, and probably the granddaddy of all is the bird-eating spider in Venezuela. And so we met these Piraroa Indians who revere this as kind of a conduit to the dead. So the spider is like allows them to communicate with the spirits of their ancestors. And so they respect the spider up until the point when the food gets scarce, and then they eat the spider. And so
and cook it and grill it and everything else.
Oh yeah! So we went on a day hike up to this incredibly hot plateau and these volcanic fields, and then eventually these caves that had like ancient handprints in them, and then you could see stashed in the corners of the cave were the bones of their ancestors, and this is where they bring the spiders to eat them. And so they bring this little basket out, and you're kind of feeling bad for the spider at this point, you know, like these, you know, they're fierce, but you know, you're feeling for them, you know, because they're about to get eaten. And this thing is, yeah, it's this, you know, it's like picture your two hands together, right, and a sort of baseball size body.
That's a big spider.
Yeah, yeah. And they do taste not like chicken.
Oh, hold
but...
on, I have a little tarantula here in my tooth here. Hold on.
You use the fangs as toothpicks. After.
Oh my God! Can't you get sick eating a spider?
Well, these are actually most people don't know that lobsters and crabs are in fact ocean-going spiders.
Oh, thanks a lot.
So they taste like crab meat. They're pretty
right.
Pretty good.
Well, have you eaten?
I did. Little smoky crab flavor.
It was what, the leg or the body?
Leg, the leg. Okay. I don't think I'd get into the, you know, and sort of like people that eat the you know, business end of the crab, like you get into the blood and guts and that. I'm
right.
Not so big on that.
Is the fuzzy part of the leg, was it gone?
Well, the fire singes the hair off.
It does, okay.
And you're left with this large land crab, basically.
And does it look like crab meat?
Yeah, I mean, the legs aren't as massive as a crab, but it comes out like crab meat.
And it tastes like crab meat.
Tastes like crab meat.
Do you have a dipping sauce or anything like that?
Well, what's good for the Venezuelan blowgun hunters is it's 40% more protein than, say, chicken or something like
Oh my
that. It's
gosh.
really rich in nutrients. So,
Well,
yeah.
they're healthy. They know
Yeah.
what they're doing. So tell me about the evolution, of course, of killing Bigfoot. How did that start?
Well, I will tell you, I'll give you a brief history. I grew up around Native American people. We had this kind of a ranch resort that my dad created up in Squamish, British Columbia. And I grew up around medicine people and shamans and telling me stories about some of the mythology and legends. And included in this in the Pacific Northwest are stories of wild men of the woods and wild women, Zunikwa and Bakwus. And then later I was filming those ceremonies, and they actually come out in these hair suits, and you
Yeah,
go,
okay.
wow, that is Sasquatch. I mean, when you see it, you go, what is the connection, between the dances and actual things that people have
Right.
sighted? And so many of the things they depict in the dances are actual animals, right? So eventually we did a show called Sasquatch Odyssey that was kind of a forerunner of all the cryptozoology shows with people like John Green and Renee DeHinden and Peter Byrne and Dr. Grover Krantz, that many of your listeners may know as kind of, the four horsemen of Sasquatchery. And
That's true.
we went from that to Monster Hunters, a series in the early 2000s. And so we did a lot of wildlife and adventure films in between, a series called Biggest and Baddest on Nat Geo Wild. I was very intrigued when someone told me about some hunters that were going out with weapons with an intent to bag a Bigfoot. And that sounded appealing to me. And I found out more about when I talked to Jim Lansdale and Bobby Hamilton, who's the founder, and Jim's a
And Jim's
co-founder,
going to join us in about 15 minutes or
and
so.
they called the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. And I think what impressed me was the fact that they were very sincere about helping people. And it really wasn't until I got down into the South that I realized this is a very different situation from where other places. First of all, you can hardly ever find any eyewitnesses.
Right.
And then Bigfoot is usually a fairly benign thing where, there's a sighting, maybe someone they throw a rock at you or something, but then it's gone. Well, down in the South, Jim and Bobby and the other men in the GCBRO are describing a creature
I have a
that,
picture of them, right? There
yes,
they are.
they can be aggressive. They can run on all fours at speed through the
I
woods.
wouldn't want to be in a costume down where they are. Let me tell you, not a smart thing to do.
You know what? That's one of the interesting things about this show in terms of, okay, is there hoaxing going on? We thought about,
Yeah.
people are reporting things slamming the side of their house, chickens being taken, their pets being taken. So I'm thinking no one is going to walk into a farm area or ranch homestead in Texas in a fursuit. Like, there's a good chance someone's going to wing you, down there. So, I mean, people are armed and people are afraid of something that is banging into their house, smashing light bulbs 10 feet off the ground, and making horrendous noises.
Were you a believer, Peter, in Bigfoot before you got involved with this TV show?
Well, I have to tell you, I obviously was intrigued. In the stories and the legends and the connection between the sightings. When we did Sasquatch Odyssey, I started meeting some very credible people. And so state troopers and ex-fish and wildlife officers, and they're describing sightings very matter-of-factly, not with a lot of embellishment. And I tended to believe those guys. And I really thought, well, there really must be something going on here that's, these guys have no reason to tell me stories. And so I go into it, quite positively and thinking I'm going to be experiencing something here.
By doing what you're doing with the TV show, have you, in your opinion, convinced people that Bigfoot does exist?
Well, I think Part of the problem with the Bigfoot story is that, tabloids got a hold of it early on and sort of made fun of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so people have been shy about coming out and describing what it is that they've seen. So I think it's become a cartoon-like figure. And certainly in terms of what these guys are facing down in the South, what they're describing to us as an aggressive creature that's maybe running out of habitat that needs to come in into human areas that people are living in. It's a very different kind of creature. And so what I wanted to do in this show, and my wife and I, it's our production company, and we wanted to create a show that presents a different view. And also the fact that many, many people are seeing something down there, and it's something very different from, say, your typical kind of tabloid Bigfoot. But there's something that people are very afraid of.
It seems to be, and they're armed, and they're ready to fight back, which we'll get into. Maybe your company is Gryphon Productions.
That's
is
right.
That it?
Yes. Okay.
Gosh, between the name of your production company and your last name, I'm going to have a real fun night tonight, right?
Von Puttkamer.
Von Puttkamer. Kammer.
There you go.
German.
It's a good one. It's a German name. Yeah.
Who were you named after?
Well, it's wasn't really named after anyone. It's just an old, Prussian name. Goes back a lot of centuries.
I bet teachers had a field day with that in school, didn't they?
Sometimes, but I didn't get teased too much because I was always a rough, tough kind of guy, so nobody gave me grief over
well,
it.
Well, and talking about rough and tough, these people who are in Killing Bigfoot don't look like they're pushovers by any means.
Not at all.
You've
Not
got
at all.
One or two women in it?
Yes, there's Brandy Hamilton is Bobby's daughter, and she's been hunting with her dad ever since she was a young girl.
And these guys, again, from all walks of life. Do they believe that there's a creature out there?
What's interesting? Yeah, most of them do, and many of them have seen it or something that they believe is a creature. And Jim Lansdale certainly will tell you a lot of encounter stories. They went into it with an open mind. I mean, Jim, for a lot of years, Jim himself, and he'll talk to you about this, he didn't, he hunted all his life in the Sabine River area and never saw anything like this, but then one day had an encounter where his son and him witnessed a creature, a Bigfoot creature, at a deer feeder. And he can talk about that, and it changed his mind. And the other hunters, I mean, this is what I appreciate about it, that they're honest. There's a couple of guys who are like, I've heard things, but until I see it with my own eyes, I'm not going to tell you 100%,
right.
But they're convinced that people are, afraid and there's something going on. But it's not like everybody is, going at this, and just saying absolutely, we know Bigfoot's there. And that the thing about taking a specimen is that science, it's what science demands. Science traditionally wants what they call a voucher specimen.
Mm-hmm.
And the museums of the world are filled with, birds and, elephants and bears and all kinds of things that we've taken to prove the existence of a new species. And it's not great, but the state we're at now where photography, right, is so easily manipulated.
Oh, sure.
And where DNA, I mean, you got to have a CSI team with you.
Oh, yeah. And pathologists and everything else.
You know how
to get this done.
You can get contaminated, right?
Why haven't we, Peter, found a carcass, a body, something of a dead Bigfoot?
Well, I have a good reply to that. And as I originally talked to Peter Byrne, who mm-hmm. was a tiger hunter and a guide and lived in the jungles. And he talks about how quickly bodies disappear in any
yes,
forest jungle habitat, that all kinds of animals come and feed on the carcass.
Pull it away and everything
and
else.
And rodents eventually gnaw the bones. And if you think about it, anyone who's spent time in the woods, how often have you come across a bear that's died of natural causes, right?
Not often,
You
if at
don't,
all.
you don't, and they're very common, right? Bears are very common, but
Yeah.
you don't really find a pile of bear bones very
Or
often,
deer.
or deer even,
Yeah.
right? And I think my favorite, I recently watched Harry and the Hendersons again, and I think the Don Ameche character says, "Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?"
Well, so that's pretty logical. Now, these folks, and Jim's going to be joining us in a moment, are they convinced that they're seeing something, whatever it may be, a monkey, some animal, a Bigfoot, but are they convinced there's something out there?
Are you talking about the eyewitnesses,
Yeah.
the people that are phoning the GCBRO?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they are. They
They're seeing something.
they call it a monster, an ape monster, and they're very frightened. And even people that had nothing to do with this show were unsolicited. We're going into a subway, and a gal's telling us about something she saw, or someone else tells us that a Bigfoot's been hit by a car down in the woods, and we had people coming to us that, we weren't even, they didn't even know we were making a film on Bigfoot, and they were telling us things down there. And when we were down in an area called the Big Thicket in southeast Texas, I talked to a tribe. I've done a lot of work with Native Americans. I've won the American Indian Film Festival many times.
Yes, you have. Good
And
for you.
so I'm talking to the tribal people down there, and they're telling me that they know this creature's out there. It's been there for thousands of years. They call it the Achuba, and they also refer to it as the cannibal people, and they're afraid of it. And there's 200 or 300 square miles of woodlands and uninhabited areas there.
Has anybody, though, reportedly been hurt by one of these creatures? Because I don't hear that.
Well, I think Jim could answer that. I mean,
All right.
they're the ones taking the reports the last 20 years, he and Bobby and the other members of the GCBRO. But in general, what you're hearing, is the attacks on farm animals and pets, and on just mischievous behavior, where this thing is slamming the walls of the house and shrieks from the forest and gorilla, monkey-like sounds that people are hearing that don't match, say, a coyote
Right,
and things
right.
people are used to hearing, right?
Yeah, they're strange sounds indeed. We had a person call us once during open lines, Peter, and he said he was on the bank of a river and saw a Bigfoot. And he was fishing and he caught two large trout. And he said the Bigfoot was like 6, 7 feet away from him. And the guy's holding the trout and he's looking at Bigfoot, and Bigfoot's looking at him and the trout. And he went, "Oh my God." So this is what he says. He hands Bigfoot these two large trout. And Bigfoot is now holding them, and he looks at the guy and gives him one back. Now, does that sound real to you?
It sounds, if it is real, it would probably have happened in the Pacific Northwest because purportedly they're not as aggressive as the ones
Yeah,
down the
that's I
south.
think that's where the call came from.
And I will tell you, if you watch our show, and it really is, I mean, first and foremost, it's a really entertaining show.
It's got to be. It's
I
television,
don't
right?
want people to think of this as just some exercise in murder or something like that. Like it's a fun show. It's a intriguing show. It's like a, oh, I didn't know that was going on down
And you
there.
haven't killed a Bigfoot on film yet.
We haven't killed a Bigfoot on film, but this is about the mission to kill a Bigfoot for science.
Hold on, Peter. We're going to be back because I'm going to ask you, why not just capture it? We'll be back in a moment. And Jim Lansdale joins us too. He's with the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Peter von Puttkamer. How'd I do? Huh? Right on.
Hitting
I love it.
it.
And we've got Jim Lansdale joining us now with a background in management and several different businesses all around the U.S. Jim has been hunting Bigfoot for about 20 years. He's one of the co-founders of the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. He was on with me a couple years ago. He is head of the investigations and has spent months on trying to find out where Bigfoot is. He first encountered Bigfoot at one of his son's deer feeders and witnessed it take off on all fours. And at that moment, he was called in to hunt Bigfoot. And Peter, before we go to Jim, very quickly, how did you two meet up? How did that happen?
I contacted Jim. I said, would you guys be interested in, you know, working on a show about what you do? And they've always been very, we work together on it. You know, they are cognizant of the fact that not everybody likes the idea of taking a specimen. And they want it to be depicted in an honest light in what it is that they do. And that's the way we do the show. So this is not a scripted show in the sense that, you know, Jim and his friends have never hunted Bigfoot. They are doing this without us, man. If we stop filming,
they're still going to do what they
they're
do.
They're doing the job down there. And we depict experiences they've had in the past and experiences that they're going through right now. And in the course of filming, some very real stuff went down, and we were off and on the run after Bigfoot.
All right, well, let's bring Jim in. Jim, welcome to the program, and welcome back, Jim. It's been a few years.
Hey, thank you so much, and good morning, George and Peter. How are you?
We are doing fine. I know when we talked a couple of years ago about Bigfoot, Jim, and about your organization, you were steadfast out there trying to find Bigfoot. So in at least a couple of years, are you getting any closer, do you think?
Well, yeah, we think we're getting closer, George, and the reason being is because we're getting more reports of these aggressive creatures coming to homes, and that's the key, is having finding the where the Bigfoot are, and that's what we've done. We're locating now. As a matter of fact, in the last month, I've been to three areas that the people are afraid to go outside because they have these creatures coming around their homes, and as a matter of fact, one lady is so afraid, she drives from her home to her mailbox because she's afraid that something will get her.
Oh, my gosh.
Two other ladies will not walk outside. I mean, they hear wood knocks. They see things. And one lady walked out on her porch just a month ago, and she said there was a 9-foot Bigfoot standing within 35 foot of her.
Wow. Has anybody reported, Jim, of being attacked or hurt by a Bigfoot?
Well, George, that's an excellent question. As far as I know, no, because here's what I'm thinking is, yeah, I know people that have been, they have told me that they've been thrown down and pushed and so forth, but if you're attacked by a Bigfoot, more than likely, you're not going to be able to tell anybody.
That's true.
You know, the thing about it is, and North American Indians always, not always, but most of them have considered them to be cannibalistic to begin with, and it says, Peter mentioned earlier, you have a tribe down here in Texas, and they call them the cannibals. And, I mean, there's some truth to what they say, because they would, according to history, they would come steal their squaws and their kids, dig up their dead, and eat them.
Jeez. I'm looking at a picture of you, Jim, holding what kind of a rifle? What is that?
It's probably my shotgun. That's a Browning 12-gauge. And is it the group pictures?
Yeah, it's the group picture of the you and the team.
Yeah, I shoot 3-inch magnums, high velocity 12-gauge shotgun. That's what I have. That's what I. But you have to understand, I am more or less the extractor. I put the hunters out in areas, and then I pick them up, and so that's the gun of choice for me. That, and I also carry a sidearm.
Now let me ask you this, Jim. And this is the controversial question. Is it shoot to kill the minute you see one of these creatures?
Oh, no, not at all. That's you know, George, I've told people this for 20 years. We could have already harvested a female and a young. And you know, I've had people say, well, why didn't you do that? That's discovery. It may be discovery for them, but it's murder to us because we're not out to harm any female or young, take a breeder out of society. What we want is these aggressive males that are coming around and causing problems at people's homes. I mean, you have a lady that starts out with 30 chickens, and a week later she has none. Okay, then you find no corpse at all, but you find where the feathers have been picked and neatly stacked. Their dogs, if they bark when these animals come around, they'll kill them and eat them. And people say, well, how do you know they eat them? Well, because I can never find the corpse. I can find the hide, but I can't find the corpse. And I don't know how many places I've been that this happens. Dogs with their head gone or just laying in the yard, just their head, and the body's gone. I've had that happen on three different occasions, and we're talking about big dogs. We're not talking about little poodles. And, I mean, just things like that. It's just these creatures that people have to understand. We've encroached on their habitat so much, and then you get these inbred ones, okay? And what I mean by inbred is that they start losing digits, and they start losing a little bit in their head. And they come around these homes because they know there's something there to eat. They know they can. There's a chicken there. There's right. a dog there. There's scraps there. There's dog food. Whatever's around there, they're going to scavenge and eat. So they don't hunt with the other group. The other group hunts deer so forth and so on. They don't have to.
Where would you put them, Jim, in the pecking order of human? Then you have the ape. Would you put Bigfoot in the middle, or is it more animal than human? What do you think?
Well, I think it's more animal than human, and I would put it in the ape factor, too, because some of the structures that I've seen it build over the years, it would remind me of probably about a 10 or 11, maybe a 12-year-old boy, and it's something kind of like a chimpanzee or even a gorilla does when they build their beds. So, yeah, I would say, you know, animal, but with some thought.
Tell us about that episode that you first saw one of these creatures.
Well, first time I saw one is years ago, and I was a complete skeptic. My oldest son and I drove down to our deer camp, and we had a little field there, and I put him a box stand and hung a perforated feeder on a little old tripod deal. And what I mean by perforated feeder is a five-gallon bucket. You bumped it, and the corn would fall out. Well, we drove down there one night, and I shined turned that truck in on the feeder, and there was something sitting there sideways built like a man. I mean, it was pretty good size. I really couldn't tell. It was about 35 yards from me. But it had its hands or feet or paws, and it was shaking that feeder. And about 10, 15 seconds, it realized, oh, crap, there's headlights or lights, and turned and looked at us. Had two huge red eyes, I would say about the size of the bottom of a Coke can, and it bolted off on all fours into this hawthorn thicket.
Jeez.
So my son asked, hey, Dad, what in the world was that? And I didn't know. I mean, Bigfoot never crossed my mind, and I never thought hardly anything about that again until the next year we were clearing the lane to hunt for him to hunt on. And we found these tracks. One was a 19.5 inch, and the other one was 9, 9.5, 10 inch. And the odd thing about it, George, they only had three toes.
Three toes. And you think that's standard?
No. I think that's inbreeding. I think it's bottleneck inbreeding.
Huh.
You have a male, and he keeps everybody beat out of it, and that's his female, his group, you know, his own kin. He's breeding to them.
Where do you think they're living, Jim?
I think they live in holes in the creeks, ground, and caves if they can find them.
Yeah.
Down okay. here, I have reports of them actually crawling, walking through the, you know, people ask me all the time, well, why don't we find tracks and why don't we find skeletons? Well, the thing about it is they walk in the creeks a lot of times, so you're not going to find the tracks there in the creeks. They'll crawl out of the creek and crawl in the hole in the side of the bank, okay? If they're cannibalistic, they're going to take the youngs that die or the ones they kill, they're going to drag them off of those holes, and they're going to eat them in there. They're not going to eat them out on the bridge. But that's why we never find anything. I mean, that and scavengers doesn't take long for the corpse to decompose.
Craig, I mean, Peter, yeah. for these cases, they're truly unbelievable.
Yeah. I just thought I'd mention, like, when Jim's talking about three-toed, I mean, the thing is they're finding tracks of three-toed, four-toed, and five-toed, what they believe is a Bigfoot. And so...
And huge.
And they're tending to find the three-toed more in the cases where people are reporting, you know, attacks on their homes and pets and farm animals. And in the show, actually in Mississippi, we have a case where a guy has had six or seven dogs taken. It's really pretty fascinating because it's... and grim, because these are pit bulls on a chain. Okay, now imagine, you could just say, well, some horrible person is killing this guy's dog. Now imagine walking into a yard of what are essentially trained, like, attack-type pit bull dogs and trying to remove it off of it. Like, no human could actually do that, right? But what he's describing is the chains being, that you'd need a truck to rip the chains apart. the chain is torn and the dog is gone.
Poor dog.
Poor dog, right?
Poor dog. Let me bring in Farland Huff. Farland, of course, became interested in Bigfoot after having his own encounter at a remote cabin in Oklahoma, and he's part of the team as well.
Nope.
No, he's not part of the team.
No, he's not. Farland will tell you what he does, but he is he runs a Hanobia Bigfoot conference, and he is of the group of people that does not want to see a Bigfoot killed and has a little different opinion about what these are.
Farland, let's bring you in. So you are on the side of let's save this creature, I assume.
Right. Well, thanks for having me. And yes, I'm a 100% no kill. And, you know, I don't wish any ill will towards Jim and his whole crew. I think they're nice guys. I just personally feel like they are a little bit misguided on how they justify to bring in a type specimen. And I am associated with the Hanobia, Oklahoma Bigfoot Festival and Conference, and I kind of helped organize the conference. And I had an encounter in the early 2000s at a remote cabin, and that is how I actually got interested in this whole thing.
Most people, I would guess, would side with what you say, Farland, and that is, let's preserve this creature, let's not shoot it, let's capture it. Would you think that?
I just feel like we don't really know what they are. I mean, Jim is saying that they're cannibals, but if I were to say they speak a language, he would say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, but he doesn't have any proof that they're cannibals. He doesn't have any proof that they have three toes because they're inbred. And he wants to say that they're apes. I feel like they're just as closely related to being people as anything else.
Now, if the creature, though, was attacking you and you had a rifle, would you use it?
Oh, well, absolutely. But on the encounter that I had at the cabin the next morning, I came out to see if I could find any tracks. And I walked down this road from this cabin, and suddenly I hear, and at this time, I don't know anything about Bigfoot activity.
Mm-hmm.
I am just completely going at this by the seat of my pants. I have no idea what's going on. So I hear a big limb snap up in the tree line. And when I look up in this tree line that parallels this road, I see a big dark figure just really hauling through this tree line. And it appears like it's on all fours, and it is charging down through the woods, coming to where I am. It's coming along this road, paralleling until it gets to the point where I am, and the brush is popping and moving, and he's grunting, and there's a snort that sounds just like a gorilla snort to me that you've heard in
yeah.
movies and at the zoo. So I have an STS rifle over my shoulder with a round in the chamber. All I have to do is swing it up. But I felt like I had enough clearance between the tree line and myself that I didn't do that. That wasn't what I felt like I needed to do. I just stood there, and I realized that there was a Bigfoot in the tree line that could see me clearly, but I could not really make out any details about him. And I just feel like each situation needs to be judged on its own. I mean, these guys are claiming that they're waiting for a male to come by that's being a nuisance, that's being
right,
a rogue,
aggressive.
That's threatening people. But when they're in the dark and they're going to take that shot, they don't know if that individual has three toes or not. They're just going to try to bag a male.
What do you think this creature is, Farland?
I think that the DNA is going to prove that they're human, as closely related to us as the Neanderthals were.
Wow.
And
like the missing link.
Well, I don't think there is a missing link. I think that what they are is going to be like our cousins, just like the Neanderthals were. I mean, a lot of people don't realize we carry Neanderthal DNA in our own DNA. We have, all of us have 1% to 3% Neanderthal DNA, and it's not because they were our ancestors. They were never our ancestors. It's because we mated with them. And I think that Bigfoot's going to be as closely related to us as the Neanderthals were.
Well, if they're at that stage, then they must have some kind of way of communicating with each other beyond just grunts, I would guess.
Well, yeah, I'm totally convinced they have a language. What I heard sounded just like a language. And when I finally decided to get a computer and get online and start finding out what's going on, I was amazed at how much there was online at the time. and how many people were looking for Bigfoot. I thought I was the only person in Oklahoma that knew Bigfoot was real when I first got online.
Does it and bother you, Farland, that there are a group of guys out there and a woman who would kill Bigfoot if they had to?
What bothers me is the perception that the general public's going to get from this, because everything that you hear on TV wants to call them monsters. And I honestly believe if you were to have a conversation with a Bigfoot, the first thing that he would want to tell you is, tell your people we are not monsters. Tell your people we are people. And I believe they are people. They are not us, but they are people. I think they have their own culture. They have their own language. You know, I found a thing called a Samurai Chatter, where Ron Moorhead recorded alleged Bigfoot vocalizations back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what I heard. When I heard that playing on the computer, I just was blown away. Like, that's exactly what I heard.
So you would not be frightened, confronted by a Bigfoot out there in the woods?
I have had a Bigfoot lay on the trail in the dark, laying right beside the trail where I was having to walk past. And when I first came around the bend on this trail, I just had a little red light on my head, and two guys are with me, and I see eye shine down on the ground up ahead. I thought it was two skunks because I began to smell a skunk. And then I realized that these eyes were moving these eye shines were moving in unison. It wasn't two individuals. I finally realized I'm looking at two eyes on a huge head. And so we stopped, and I'm trying to get the guys to see what I'm seeing, but they never could see it. I think they needed to look over my shoulder and get right behind me and look in order for the reflection to hit them right. But this Bigfoot just kept laying there, and finally he pushed himself back, and then the guys did hear when he ran away, the boom, boom, boom.
They make a huge noise when they run in through the woods, that's for sure.
Right. Well, see, he didn't try to attack us. He didn't do anything, and that's the other thing, that when I listen to Jim and his members describe the Bigfoot appearance and the Bigfoot behavior, that sounds like people behavior to me.
Well, it's pretty darn close, Farland. It's pretty darn close. Thank you. We'll be back in a moment with more in your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.